That's the Kiki music, and welcome to another week with Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See, and I'm here with the Pop Culture Happy Hour gang. How's everybody?
Hey.
Oh, we're fantastic.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, this sounds like all the voices that I remember and know so well. Hey, Stephen, why don't you tell everybody who you are?
I am Stephen Thompson with NPR Music.
How about you, Trey? Who are you?
I'm Trey Graham. I'm your editor on the Monkey See blog and the movies editor for NPR.org.
And back from tweeting from the swim up bar, which we so appreciated.
Was there a hammock dangling over the swim up bar?
Two entirely different places, yes. And I am back, man. I missed you guys.
And who in the heck are you?
I am Glenn Weldon. I write about books and comic books for the NPR website. And I would feel an ache in my heart when I missed you guys. I would try to assuage it and fill that ache with another mojito, another pitcher of sangria, or occasionally another serving of masitas de puerco.
Oh.
Which, as sexy as that sounds in Spanish, it sounds even sexier in English. It's fried pork chunks.
Yum.
Fried wads of pork.
Can you imagine?
How is it that you ever managed to bring yourself back?
I know, right? Well, we had to return. The thing is that I came back with a sort of bronzed glow. If this was a video podcast, people could see that I'm... Adonis is a strong word. But just as pasty and pale.
I was going to say, by bronzed glow, you mean that your freckles have merged.
Exactly right.
I was thinking you've kind of got like a birch tree.
Yeah.
Well, like it's a paler shade of white.
My people
paler
are,
and peeling.
It's, well, no, actually no, because I was very careful. 50 sunblock, which as I've said, is like putting cream cheese on your body.
Was it suet?
It was suet-like.
Oh, cream cheese and pork chunks. It sounds like a great vacation.
It's a magical land, Puerto Rico. My people are the Welsh people. We are a pale, mole-like race. We are bred for the mines. We are bred to do work in the mines. So the sunlight that gives the earth life is, to us, a deadly poison. I didn't date any sun. But... I'm back. Yay. And give it up to Barry, man. She did a great job.
Oh, man.
She was so awesome.
We miss Barry. In fact, I think you should all leave. I'm going to go get Barry.
If it wouldn't add...
It's going to be the Linda and Barry show. Yeah,
if it wouldn't make this the world's most inscrutable ruckus, we would add a fifth microphone to have Barry.
It's absolutely true. Somebody actually left a comment on the blog today that said, you know, I propose adding Barry as a permanent member of Pop Culture Happy Hour. And I said, Barry is a permanent member of Pop Culture Happy Hour.
Yeah.
We just don't have enough chairs.
It's true.
Well, the next time someone is off getting drunk and hanging in a hammock and eating fried pork chunks.
That person would seem to be me.
That's what it sounds
like.
Seem
to need to be you.
It sounds like you. Then you will see Barry again, and we thank her, obviously, for her noble service with Judith Kranz.
And dropping the T-bomb.
Yeah, that was funny.
She did drop the T-bomb.
Yeah, and I would just also like to give a quick shout-out to the first person to find Barry's T-bomb hilarious, which was Stephen's mother.
Of course.
Hi, Mom. So this week we're going to start with the new reality, which is Conan on TBS.
Wait, Conan who?
That would be Conan O'Brien.
Sure. Just for the sake
speaking
of people.
Speaking of pale mole-like. A pale mole-like race. So Conan's show debuted a little over a week ago. We're here on a Tuesday, and he has been on for a little over a week. And I personally, my habit with late-night shows is that I DVR them, and then in the morning I pick some or one and either scan through it or watch it. I have watched a bunch of it, and it actually has been pretty good. How about, I know you watched a couple of them, Stephen, or you watched the first one.
Yeah, my habit with late night shows is I don't watch them.
Right.
I am just too busy watching football or reading books. You know, I mean, I own 5 TVs, and yet I don't watch a ton of late night television. Just, I don't know, for whatever reason. I think in part because I used to live in the Midwest, and they started an hour earlier, and now they seem to go on around the time Test Patterns should be on. But I watched the first episode.
Cool 1975 reference, by the way.
Yeah.
They don't
do Test Patterns anymore? I don't even know. It's all infomercials now, right? Or is that
right.
Another old, now they have something else completely.
Moving on.
I'm sorry, I cut you off.
You derailed me. So I watched the first episode of Conan. What it needs is an exclamation point.
Yeah.
Like,
that's the musical.
What's the Saturday Night Live woman who had a very short-lived TV show where it was her name? Cleghorn!
Jeez. Jeez. Good reference.
That is the most excited anyone has been about saying Cleghorn maybe ever.
The most energy behind that pronunciation.
It needed, no, it had, because she had a very, very short-lived show, and the name of the show was Cleghorn! Exclamation point. And so I think that Conan O'Brien's show, now that it is just called Conan, should be Conan!
Conan with an exclamation
point. Anyway, first episode I thought was great.
Yeah.
I thought they absolutely were in the pocket from the first episode. It doesn't mean that every single thing worked. I thought the I always think celebrity interviews, whether it's The Daily Show, The right. Tonight Show, Letterman, no matter who it is, I almost always think that celebrity interviews are boring.
Mm-hmm.
And the show itself, outside of what I always think is boring, which is celebrity interviews, I thought was just fantastically funny. And I thought was just that, like, there didn't seem to be much rust. It was a little odd to see Andy Richter reframed as kind of the hype man. Yeah. It's the goon.
And he
which
had gotten,
is really
well,
his,
he was doing
was
that,
he doing that
certainly
more?
On The Tonight Show. He was doing that. Yeah. And I think, you know, that's always been his role to some degree. I do agree that he is still feeling that out a little bit, what's going to work for him in the long run. But yeah, anyway.
I have not watched a ton of right. The Tonight Show
right.
in
right.
particular.
Well, so we I can think take... many people didn't.
No, that's the thing. I was certainly a Conan hypocrite. You know, one of these people when mm-hmm. the thing with NBC happened, I was like incensed. Oh my God, because he's so much funnier than Leno.
Yeah.
I never watched the Conan Tonight Show.
And
I
you mean, can, of course, believe both of those things sincerely, that he's much funnier than Leno, but you still don't necessarily watch either one.
No, no, no. Because
so
again...
So is Nightline.
Right.
But the thing about the Conan show, even when he was doing the Tonight Show, and especially when he was doing the original Late Night, he has always leaned harder on the comedy writing than any other talk show,
mm-hmm.
And less on the celebrity interviews, because I don't care what the third lead from Ghost Whisperer has to say. I could care less. But he would always, like, for example, when he started off on Late Night, he did this bit, which was a variation on Jay Leno's, hey, there's a typo in the classified ad. Let's spend 10 minutes on that.
That's not bad.
That's not a bad Leno.
It's everybody's Leno. Everybody
I like
has
the
exactly
spirit of it.
Leno.
Yeah. I like the spirit of it.
But instead of doing that, so he did a thing where he put up a
I seriously think my Leno consists of and that's all I got.
It's a variation on a theme. He held up this little newspaper ad, and you think it's going to be that bit, and it turns out to be something in the ad that they've created in the writer's room, which is just this totally absurd thing. That was a departure, and he's consistently done that. He said, well, I'm going to make this about comedy writing and not about playing little things on the off of the news.
Mm-hmm.
His monologues are still, you know, hacky and lame. I think the monologue itself... the topical monologue is a thing that's time has come.
Oh God, yeah.
Because it's so no matter who does it, it is so safe, so innocuous, so hesitant to offend that doesn't have a point of view.
Right.
There's no political perspective of
any
kind.
No,
which is why
no.
I don't watch late night talk shows. I watch Stewart and Colbert because I want to see the news of the day interrogated, examined, done something with, not just sort of a very easy sort of joke for. That just gets tossed off.
And the one way in which I would actually draw a comparison, as sacrilegious as it seems, between Conan and Johnny Carson is that when I enjoy Conan doing a monologue, it's the same time that I would enjoy Johnny Carson doing a monologue, which is when he's sort of reacting to the reaction to the monologue.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Right.
And Conan can be the same way. It'll strike him funny that something did get a laugh or didn't get a laugh.
Or somebody says woo in a certain
way. And he sort of reacts
spontaneously. And he's riding the wave of the audience.
I was just
going to
say,
he's riding the reaction. And the joke itself is rarely really funny, just because, like you say, monologue jokes are kind of, it's in their DNA to be lame.
Right.
Truly. And I think the same thing happens on any late night show. And it's one of the reasons I think why Craig Ferguson doesn't do them.
Mm-hmm.
Just comes out and talks for a while. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have the setup punch structure
doesn't have
of
that
monologues.
Rhythm. It's sort of his id at play in
front
of the camera.
Because it's a deadly format.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it was in the second episode, Conan did this piece where he went to talk to the censor at TBS about which euphemisms were going to be allowed for various things. And it became such a sort of grand, just goofy gag. It went on and on, and he just got sillier and sillier and sillier. And kind of running down these lists of, would this be allowed? Would this be allowed? Would this be allowed?
I'd like to ask you some questions, specifics, slang terms for the male genitalia, okay?
Okay.
I'm guessing it's okay to say penis, because it's...
It's the anatomical correct word.
Yes, for what that thing is.
For what?
Yeah. Tell me if these are acceptable. Sir Dangles?
Yes.
Manaconda?
Yes.
Bananimal?
Yes.
The one-legged pigeon?
Yes.
The super soaker?
Yes.
Why'd you giggle at that one?
That's just funny.
Sexual positions. I'm going to fire some slang at you for sexual positions. You tell me if they're okay. Taking grandma to Applebee's. Decorating the lady cake.
Yes.
The old Tokyo sandblaster.
I'm sorry.
Have you ever had? You ever done the old Tokyo sandblaster?
Not that I'm aware.
I think it was either a real censor or it was a guy who was pretty good at acting like one and actually acting like he was gradually being cracked up by being asked all these questions about, am I allowed to say bazoombas and things like that? but it was great. It was great fun. And it was a good example. I think one of the other things that went well, and Stephen, if you saw the first one, you know, he was still making a certain number of jokes about NBC.
Sure.
And about, you know, I took this new gig and I'm making a lot less money,
right,
and stuff like
that. Bit where he's in front of the board of TBS and they hand him an offer and you know it's going to be something along these lines, but the sheet just says much less.
Yeah. So, but very quickly after that first one, he got to the point where it was like, we're going to put the NBC jokes to bed.
Good.
We're going to put, and one way that they accomplished that, when Tom Hanks was on and Conan started talking to Tom Hanks about the fact that Tom Hanks is apparently responsible for everybody calling Conan Coco, because he came out and did this and got this chant going, and he was sort of teasing Tom Hanks.
Now, I mentioned this. You ruined my life. You started. It was just.
It was just a thing. You
it was
guys,
a little quip that
you guys
made.
Did it on another thing. Someone referred to you as Coco, and I thought it was a thing that they called you.
So yeah, and so you repeated it. You got people chanting it.
Finally, he'll blame something on someone other than Jay.
At that moment, it was put to bed.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of like, it was a very good humored, you know, Conan let it be on his show. He let himself get ribbed for that. And it was so perfect that it was Tom Hanks,
yes,
who is
the mayor
of Hollywood.
The mayor of Hollywood.
He is the mayor of Hollywood, and he completely deserves it.
That idea that Conan would let that bit stick in the edit. And, you know, that combined with some of the promos for the premiere, you know, the one where he's washing the desk and sort of doing that goofy stuff. I think he's more apt to allow himself to look just full on stupid than any of the others, with the possible exception of Ferguson.
Ferguson's very good about it.
And that's endearing.
When you're in that position like Conan's in, where you've kind of been a folk hero, it's very useful to come in and be willing to take a few jabs.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm.
And that's something Leno would never do, something Letterman would never do.
Yeah. Well, one thing I think gets lost in the relaunch of Conan right now is that Conan is not particularly competing against Leno or Letterman. Really, what he's competing with, clearly, is The Daily Show and Colbert.
Yeah, Stern and Colbert. Right. Which raises the question for me. I have had very little to contribute to this conversation.
Right.
Because I'm one of those people who TiVos a lot and who does Netflix streaming a lot. Mm-hmm. So there's just no room in my life for late-night television anymore. And I wonder if some of that miscalculation about moving who where and who's going to assume the throne has to do with the people making those decisions not sufficiently anticipating that shift.
Yeah.
I think officially they know, like they work it into their thinking.
Right.
But they haven't fully accepted that there's never going to be another Johnny Carson for reasons other than the fact that there's never going to be another Johnny Carson.
You're right.
Yeah. You know, obviously he was the only one of him that you're ever going to have. But it's also true that there aren't shows like that anymore, both because of DVRs and because, you know, when I do watch late night shows, I don't stay up until 12:30 in the morning. I prefer the 12:30 shows to the 11:30 shows.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Both Ferguson and Fallon I prefer to Leno and Letterman. But I don't watch them at 12:30 at night. I watch them at 6:30 in the morning. Just put them on the DVR and go through, and the guests I'm interested in, maybe I'll watch.
They're your Today Show.
They are.
They're your Good Morning America.
Such a much better.
That's a better recipe.
Well, have you read any of this sort of backlash, mini backlash, saying he's not reinventing the form, he's just doing his old show? What do you think of that? Because I haven't seen more than a couple episodes.
Well, it's true that he's working within the form that already exists. It's not as different. You know, there were people who said, look, I want Conan to go and do a totally different kind of show. Just do a comedy show. Mm. Don't have a desk and don't have celebrities and don't have a monologue and just do a comedy show. But
that's not him.
That's not the guy he is.
Well,
right?
And it's not what he wants to do.
Absolutely.
He really wants to make a go of this format, I think.
Well, he angled for the Tonight Show. It was his dream job.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And, so. It was interesting. I think some of you have probably heard this from me before, but when I was at Press Tour, I think in January, when this was all breaking, Louis C.K. was doing his presentation for his new FX show and was asked, because he used to write for Conan, about this whole thing, and sort of said, he's got the thing about the Tonight Show, like some people do. And he sort of said, I don't really know why, because it's not his thing. It's clearly not his franchise. It's not where it makes sense for him to be, but this is his dream. Mm-hmm. This thing he madly, crazily wanted to do. And you can't tell a guy not to want the thing he wants.
So are we saying the property was not the right property for him to target, but the form itself is a good fit for him?
I'll tell you what I think it is. Conan is a niche-y kind of guy, which mm-hmm. is death on network television. Mm-hmm. Broadcast network television has a really hard time dealing with niche-y kinds of entertainment because they're very beloved by the people who love them, but it's not enough people. But if you are on, this is why in some ways I think going to basic cable is similar to going to 1230. It doesn't have to be that many people.
Right.
You don't have to be drawing the kind of audiences that you need in order to be Leno or Letterman, in order to compete in that realm. And I think Conan is more of an oddball kind of guy, and that's when he's really good, is when what he's doing is fairly weird and sometimes a little bit too bawdy or whatever.
It's a little too bawdy. It's often a little more intellectual than Leno's, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, Leno,
I don't know about the bear.
And I've given
that's
like
the body.
Conceptual. Let's say it's more conceptual.
Right. And I think, you know, Leno, and I've made my feelings about Leno fairly clear, but I the whole thing with Leno is that they sell him as the everyman mm-hmm. guy. And to me, he is the most contemptuous of regular people. That whole
jaywalking.
Oh, is your favorite.
How much I cannot stand jaywalking. That segment, he goes, if you haven't seen this is the one where he goes around and finds people on the street and asks them questions and they give a stupid answer. And he puts together literally just a montage of people not knowing basic facts.
Who's the president of the United States?
Which, first of all, I can't stand because I don't think that laughing at, you know, I don't think inviting people to the comedy of look at these dumb idiots is all that, you know.
Not if you're supposedly the nice
anyway.
Guy.
Right, exactly. Right.
It doesn't come off as satirical so much as just making fun.
Yeah. And I wrote something very early on in Jimmy Fallon's show about how he had gone to Times Square and done this bit where he was finding people and asking them to do their celebrity impressions. And it could have been a very jaywalking kind of thing where mm-hmm. people do their impressions and you just see what these dumb, untalented, like just stupid people making fools out of themselves. It wasn't like that at all. He totally wanted you to be great. And mm-hmm. there were a couple people who were actually weirdly good, and he would just giggle and think it was so fantastic and get all excited. They just had a piece in New York Magazine about Fallon's show, which basically adopts my exact philosophy of him, which is it's the philosophy of positivity and happiness and mm-hmm. sort of this up energy.
And generosity. Yeah.
Which I really, really like. And I think that's what's working for him, and that's what's different from jaywalking mm-hmm. to me. So anyway, late night. We sometimes watch it. That's our motto. We sometimes, but only in the morning. Anyway, so another thing I was going to ask you guys about this week is we've been talking a little bit via email about searching for pop culture artifacts and things that you remember that perhaps you liked or were important to you. And the fact that everything has become so easy to find on YouTube or
eBay.
Or eBay or Amazon, no matter how obscure. And whether it's sort of damaging the practice of nostalgia, because it's so easy to get everything that if you want something, you just go out and get it, and then you watch it whenever you want or listen to it whenever you want, and you sort of lose your weird pining fondness for it. Glenn, what do you think? I mean, you're a comic book guy, and you would think that perhaps, you know, as a collector, a guy who collects various things, maybe you'd have some thoughts.
Yeah, I'm not a collector. I'm an accumulator. There's a difference. I don't actually go out and seek certain things. I mean, sure, I've gone out and sought specific comics that I remember from a kid, and you know, the luster is gone. That's kind of the idea. But there was a show that ran from 1971 to 1977 called The Electric Company,
oh, mm-hmm.
which shaped my sensibility as a very young kid.
Mine too.
I credit it for being the main reason I was reading at age three. The fact that it was a very funny show, it was an irreverent show, you could tell, even as a very young kid, that there was a skit and then there was an aside that one of the actors was doing that wasn't planned. You could just, you get a sense of that. Mm-hmm. There's so much of this show that I just absorb straight, so much stuff that my brother and I would torture my parents with. It's the plumber, he's come to fix the sink. We are out of sweet rolls. All these dialogues, all these skits.
Oh, we are out of sweet rolls.
Oh, my God. And this is the thing. For years, mm-hmm. in college and afterwards, I would go around to people of my age. Mike is looking blank.
Mike actually
Mike
did the
just
hand
made
over,
the over my head gesture. Yes.
And all you would have to say is Spellbinder, The Adventures of Letterman, and you'd get this thing, and you'd spend, yes. you know, like, you just remember it all. And so I looked for years on YouTube, couldn't find anything, and then a few years back, the DVDs came out.
Yeah.
And I thought what I was going to do is get it, sit down, and spend the entire time going, I forgot about that. I forgot about that. And what happened was the exact opposite. My brain had already internalized all the fun, cool stuff and forgotten all the really cheesy 70s chroma key that they should have subsisted on.
Yeah.
And all the sort of boring sort of filler stuff. And it was a shock.
I got the DVDs and immediately sat down with my kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, got to watch my own kids, you know, laugh at the same things that I laughed at. And
what was a letdown were, if you remember, the intros that the cast did to each episode, the original cast. Now, it's 40 years later going on, which that's on a very surface level, on a very shallow level, that's one thing. The other thing is that the show itself was anarchic, was irreverent, and there was this gravity, this self-congratulatory weight of this thing we accomplished in every one of these introductions that really sucked all the fun out of it.
We are educating children.
Boy. Mm-hmm. So well, that's mine.
Yeah. Well, and there do continue to be certain shows that, for whatever reason, you can't get, usually because of music.
Right. The Smothers Brothers.
But also, like, China Beach is one.
Right.
China Beach, a show many, many people loved, and that one of my dear friends is just panting, waiting for.
Yeah.
But it's not out because they used so much music. The rights would be so prohibitively difficult to get that they just, it doesn't come out. And there are other shows where, like, when they put out the WKRP, they replaced all the real music with...
They also butchered a key moment in Quantum Leap, as I recall. There's some incredibly memorable scene in Quantum Leap that is played over a certain song, and they had to swap out the song, and all
the music
hardcore
rights.
Quantum Leap fans were not happy.
The Leapies.
The Leapers.
Oh, the outrage.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I've seen that even on DVDs of far less significant television shows. Like, you know, you can even see that on DVDs of, like, Felicity and, you know.
Are you suggesting?
Party of Five. Not that I've ever seen Party of Five on DVD or anything, but...
I mean, I assume that sort of thing is going to happen less and less because they're negotiating the deals up front now.
Oh, yeah. But for whatever reason, there do continue to be certain shows that you... I believe The Wonder Years you still can't get for similar music-related
reasons. Where is Relativity, people?
Where is Relativity? Yeah, yeah. How about you, Thompson? Do you have a search?
Ooh. Me.
Go ahead. How about you, Trey?
We were going to get to you eventually.
I just want to pick up on this idea that there are things that you can't find.
Yeah.
Because there's a whole other kind of thing that you can't find in the real world, and that's theatrical performances. And,
oh, yeah.
And the availability of instant search and video and audio and so on has made these things available to memory in a way that they never were before, except to a very small group of people. And in most cases, I think one of the things about theater is that it only lives in memory. You can only recall the night you were there. But occasionally there are things that transcend that don't get cheapened by their accessibility. And one of those things for me, one very specific thing for me, and I swear to God, this is not an attempt to restart the gay off. But there is a magnificent YouTube video of Judi Dench on a BBC chat show doing Send in the Clowns.
Oh, yeah.
And it is something that probably was not available to the world, because I'm guessing that chat show is probably not released on a BBC DVD. But, oh, my God, that thing is something I can go back to. You know, I'll forget about it for 6 months, and then I'll think about it, and I'll go watch it. And it's better every time.
I believe I have seen that, and it is lovely. You probably showed it to me.
I may have.
That reminds me, there are also certain productions, particularly things that were on TV, that take forever to get to DVD, sort of special productions. That production of Cinderella, that production of the Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella.
With Brandy and Whitney Houston?
No, the old one.
The original, okay.
Yeah, that I think took a long time to show up on DVD, as I recall, and there was some sort of event when that...
There was an American Playhouse production of Thornton Wilde's Skin of Our Teeth with Harry Gould and Blair Brown, which is the one that I judge everything against because it was so good, and it was such a young person being exposed to that sort of meta.
Man, that's a tough play, too.
It is, and it was brilliant.
Yeah.
But now it's on DVD. Yeah. I went back, and it was just as good.
Yeah. How about you, Jonathan? You have a search?
Yeah. I've, over the years, managed to find a lot of what I've... You know, what I've been looking for through the magic of things like YouTube. For example, there is a Canadian holiday cartoon that we had on Betamax tape, and which I wore out to the point where when I tried to dupe it a few years ago, the tracking was just horrifying.
Way off,
and it's called The Great Toy Robbery, and it's a 7-minute Canadian cartoon in set in the Old West, in which some bandits raid Santa's sleigh. And hijinks ensue. I find that one particularly delightful, and if you go to YouTube and just type in The Great Toy Robbery, you can just watch it. And for years, I would get leads on, you know, old instructional VHS tapes that were in libraries that had, you know, had these old Canadian cartoons on them, and I was going to buy them and transfer it to DVD, and then I would own it. And, you know, I do like to actually own the physical thing rather than just having it on YouTube where it can be cruelly torn away from me. But The Great Toy Robbery I have settled for having on YouTube, and we'll throw a link on the blog. My greatest pop culture search that actually was successful was there was an old Nichols and May comedy routine that was a part of my family lore that my mother could recite to me from memory and had to recite to me from memory because
you couldn't
find it anywhere. And it was this amazing sketch where the two of them,
so funny.
Mike Nichols and Elaine May, you know, today probably better known as movie directors, but were an amazing, amazing comedy duo. And they would do a lot of bits where they would be filmed sort of in split screen, and he would be phoning her, and she would be the operator, the counselor, whatever, and he would be trying to get information out of her. And God, those bits were so incredible. But in this particular one, he was a bereaved loved one of someone who has just died, a neighbor, and she was his grief lady. She would walk him through the various purchasing options that were available to him.
The more expensive funeral down to the...
down to the cheapest option.
Before you go, Mr. Mazofreen, I was just wondering, would you be interested in some extras for the loved one?
What kind of extras?
Well, how about a casket?
We have to have a casket.
Yes. It looks better.
How much?
We have three prices. $1,243, $768, and $14.98.
May I ask, what do those prices represent?
That's mahogany, oak, and nubby plywood.
Nubby plywood. Tell me, what kind of an appearance does that make?
Cheap.
It was incredibly lavish thing, incredibly normal thing, incredibly cheap thing. And it's
a delightfully funny routine.
An incredibly funny routine. And for years and years and years, my mother could not find it. And if my mother, who is no more difficult to shop for person on planet Earth than the woman who buys herself everything, and my mom could not find it, and through ingenious machinations, through the Aspen Comedy Festival, I was able to obtain that sketch and present it to my mom as a gift. And that is my great pop culture search that has been successful. But nowadays, just about everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just about everything is there. What I have found I've had the hardest time finding, and this is so lame, is old sporting events that I would like to relive. Mm. I was explaining to a friend, you know, I was watching the Wisconsin-Iowa game, which was this incredible thriller, and Wisconsin beat Iowa, and I was like, oh man, I didn't tape the game. He was like, well, yeah, you didn't tape this conversation either. Like, why on earth would you need to relive that game? But there are sort of, I have this kind of completist sensibility. And so, like, not having the 1994 Rose Bowl where Wisconsin beat UCLA has always...
Oh, man, I feel you.
Has always
been... Oh, Thompson. Yeah.
And I will just say that I don't have a particular one to mention, but I will say that one of the ones that I had for a very long time, and what I find sometimes you can't find, is TV shows that were on long enough ago that they weren't, you know, put on DVD then, and they were insignificant enough to most people that they never went to DVD.
It's your move. No.
Yeah, you stole it, because the basis of this story is that when Stephen and I used to exchange emails, we got talking at one point about It's Your Move and the fact that we both had this fondness for this mid-80s Jason Bateman TV show that most people did not care about at all.
Jason Bateman was about 14.
Yeah, right. But that I very much loved it. And he mentioned that he very much loved it and managed to hook me up with DVD copies of It's Your Move. Gotten from the fact that his mom, who keeps coming up, it's like the it's the Maggie show.
We love you, Maggie.
She is the Vera.
That she had it on Beta, I believe.
Yes.
Had it, still had Beta video. And this was, you know, just 5 years ago, probably. And
so it's not enough to be your fan. There also has to be swag, too.
No, it wasn't like that. Don't make it ugly. Don't make it ugly, Glenn Weldon, just because you're mad that you're not in you know, Puerto Rico anymore.
Yeah,
I know.
Trust me.
Don't be bitter.
I mean, we brought you a hammock in here and everything.
I know.
We did. Which
Mojito is light.
Yeah, he's rocking in it right now. Anyway, so that brings us to our final part of our show every week, when we like to talk about something that is making us happy this week. Glenn Weldon, I assume that the thing that's making you happy this week is finally being out of miserable, horrible Puerto Rico with its fried pork chops.
Yes, with its fried pork chops and its delicious rice and happy, smiling people.
All right.
So I'm here in this room.
Else? Yeah. Yeah.
None of the above. All right. I apologize in advance. This is a very NPR PBS pick, and I apologize for being so predictable. But there is this show that recently finished on Masterpiece Mystery here in the United States called Sherlock.
You know, I've heard good things.
Oh, my God.
Oh, there's been much love expressed.
This show is created by Stephen Moffat, who was behind the revival of Doctor Who. It's only a three-part series. How did they get away with that over there? It's only three episodes. It's available on Hulu until December 7th, and then it will be taken off. It's available on the Masterpiece Mystery site. But the DVDs are available, and it stars Martin Freeman, who was the original Tim, on The British Office, as Watson. He's great. It stars as Holmes, the perfect Sherlock Holmes, in the form of one Benedict Cumberbatch. Benedict Cumberbatch.
Who, when he was born, his parents said, one day you will play Sherlock Holmes on Masterpiece Mystery.
Fun fact, not his real name. In fact, he's just leasing it from J.K. Rowling, because she just keeps churning out these names. You got nothing to do with them anymore. So what happens is British actors come to her and say, my name is Jake Sterling. That's not going to work over here.
She says,
from now on, you
In fact, he's not even really British.
Exactly. You are Chumley Bubblin' Squeak. Go! From now on, you are Templeton Hamsterwheel. Go and make cheaply produced science fiction television.
Let the record show that he is not reading these names from notes on his arm.
Well, sort of. So, this show. The chemistry between Cumberbatch and Freeman is amazing. The dialogue is so on. It sparkles. You know, this is a procedural show at the end of the day. But, you know, like in American procedurals, like in CSI, there is a punishing expository nature to the dialogue where when somebody is talking, they're either explaining what they've just done or what they're about to do, and there's no other reason for dialogue to exist. This has a lilt. It's got a snap. It's got a reason for you to pay attention. Because, again, it comes down to this show has a sensibility. So it's just fantastic. Look it up. Download it. Whatever you need to do. It's fantastic. The reveal, I'm not going to say anything more about this, but the reveal of his arch enemy Moriarty is done so well. It is quirky, it is goofy, it is over the top, it is impossible to look away from. There's not much of it, but man, it's fantastic. So
I've had people say that it is just their one goal to get me to watch this show.
I think I've had multiple people tell me that we need to cover it on the podcast.
Yes.
So. Well, yeah, I was away. I didn't know that.
So thanks for doing the hard
work.
Yeah,
now I don't have to watch it.
First episode, great. Second episode, meh. Third episode, boom. Fantastic.
Wow.
Excellent. Wonderful. How about you, Trey Graham? What's making you happy this week?
What's making me happy over the last week or so is another sort of rediscovery. I talked earlier about sort of retrieving things from YouTube from time to time and sort of being happy about them again. I watched for the first time in, I think, ever, the CMAs last week, the Country Music Awards. And what it reminded me of is that I kind of like country music. And I don't always listen to a whole lot of country music, but I have a lot of it. And what it sparked in me, what that show in particular sparked in me, was the memory that I don't much care for what passes for country music in on the radio these days, but I really, really adore the older generation of country ladies in particular.
Oh, absolutely.
When Loretta Lynn walked out on stage and started singing at 70 whatever she is with a voice that still sounds like I remember it sounding, you know, when I first heard her 20-odd, 30-odd years ago. I seriously got chills. I got emotional watching her, and I spent the next two or three days with a list of Emmylou Harris and Dolly Parton and Linda Ronstadt and a whole bunch of other just golden age country, Tammy Wynette, women who can sing a heartbreak song, sing a sassy song, sing a kick your tail song, and just bring serious vocalism to all of those things. I don't care much for guys. I've never gotten the country guys.
No, I don't think that's entirely true.
Oh, come now. No, but I've never been like
you
the George.
You completely lose the gay off then.
I know, it's true.
Yeah. I was completely wrong.
I've never been like the Hank guy or the George Strait guy or, you know, sure. I've never gotten the classic era guys. If I'm going to listen to a male country singer, it is more likely to be somebody who's more contemporary. But the women?
Well, I think what a lot of those women have in common that their male counterparts of the time don't necessarily have is they manage to be sad and fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's the ability to seamlessly juggle the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something maudlin about male sort of country singers, I think.
Right? Well, sort of stoic. Yeah.
Even though it is sort of maudlin, I've always kind of envied the ability to do like what George Jones did. And I first discovered this particular song because James Taylor covered it on this live James Taylor, because that's who I am. I'm the girl who discovers George Jones via James Taylor.
James Taylor covers
and explains this song called She Thinks I Still Care. The way he explains it, he's like, it's one of these songs where it's your roof leaks and your dog's dead and all this stuff. And the song is so out there. It's just so like your heart is lying on the table, thunk 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 thunk. And I think there's something about, like, for you it's the ladies, and I love them too. I mean, I love all those women that you talked about, and I listen to some of them myself, but I gotta admit, the maudlin, mournful dude, I have some place in my heart for as well.
There are exceptions to my no dudes rule. I mean, I'm a William
Wade. Yes, there are.
Come on.
You're
being obtuse. Is the
problem. I am kind of a William Whalen fan, for instance.
Oh yeah.
You know, but yeah, sorry.
Well, one thing that's making me happy this week, and this is a total bonus round, is that I got sent a free copy of that 15-CD Hank Williams Sr. box set that comes encased in, like, a wooden radio with a little dial that my kids like to grab and turn on. So it's like, the Millers! Love sick, heart sick, blues boy, Hank Williams!
That's pretty good.
which my kids love almost as much as I do.
Yeah.
I do have a bonus round, since you mentioned bonus.
Sure.
I have a bonus item. The other thing that is making me happy is product that arrived, believe it or not, it crossed my desk a few days ago, and I forwarded this product because it arrived via email. I forwarded it to someone who may or may not be in this room. And what I would like to first like to describe the product and then I'm going to describe the reaction to it. This product comes in a box that says the pet petter. There's a cat on the box, and there's this device sitting next to the cat. It's sort of an articulated arm thing with a pad on the end of it, and it says things like rechargeable for hotel use and four speeds. And it's I forwarded the email pitch for this product, and Mike, you're going to need to get the bleep ready, because I know we're only allowed to use profanities in NPR stories when we're doing reportage. So I'm merely reporting. Merely reporting what transpired. The response that came back was, "This is the most depressing thing I've ever seen. It should be called F*** You Cat." and of course, this is a gag, right? This is a box that you buy to pack.
These are gift boxes.
Yes, these are fake right. gift boxes that you buy, and you put somebody's real present in, and then you, you wrap it up.
We've lost
All right,
Trey.
So here's what Trey is telling you. What right. Trey is telling you is that he showed me the pet petter, and I originally, looking at it, thought that it was a real thing. Now, here's what I want you to understand. Real things that have come across my desk in this job would include, just recently, some sort of Kim Kardashian-based or Kim Kardashian-mocking bank product of some sort. I oh, still yeah. don't remember exactly what it was. A Jersey Shore Halloween costume. Also, I would argue that Trey only takes this position because he's never seen a Harriet Carter catalog.
Oh, no, I have, too.
God.
And what I want to tell you is, there's nothing about the pet petter that could not be in a Harriet
Carter
catalog.
Yes, absolutely. And no, that's
so
what makes it
the
genius.
The fact that you are so, that you find it so uproariously funny that I could possibly have thought this was a real thing.
No.
You know what Trey is saying? I place more confidence than that in the novelty product industry, that they would never make such a thing. How could one think that they would make such a thing?
Welcome to
Sky Mall. I'm going to argue that
I am
the one here who is on the side of rationality. And you know what? Being in here for what is good and sensible in the world, that's what's making me happy this week.
There we go.
Booyah.
Snap.
In a world where there are battery powered wine openers,
yes.
I am, you know, and, you know, little battery powered fans to cool you off. This is a perfectly plausible gag product, and
Thank
I think
you.
It's
That's
genius.
It. That's it. That's the end of I argument just, then.
Yeah. I will say I'm particularly fond as far as items I've actually purchased as gifts. My favorite is the coffee bean storage canister, where it's supposed to vacuum seal your beans. So if you love coffee but wish it were louder, because what it does is at random intervals goes in your kitchen when no one's in there.
I just...
Who doesn't love a vacuum sealed bean?
Doesn't love random noise.
Oh, it's like those new high-powered hand dryers in the bathrooms, because what you need in a public restroom is more noise.
Yeah. Stephen is not explaining to you that the bean vac is not supposed to make that noise.
It makes that noise
because it doesn't get properly closed. It was the failure to properly close the bean vac that caused it to do this.
Nice.
Anyway, being the person who understands just how stupid the consumer product industry is, that is what is making me happy this week. I'm sorry. Have you gotten to what makes you happy this week,
No,
Thompson?
Nothing makes me happy.
Nothing makes you
no,
happy?
No, no. I want to plug an animation website called dickers.com. DIKKERS.
Just to be clear.
Yes.
Don't misspell it. You'll get a totally different website.
It's his name.
Also, donkey racing.
Yeah. Go to dickers.com. DIKKERS. Scott Dickers, who a longtime former editor-in-chief of The Onion, now has an animation website that is wonderfully funny, wonderfully beautifully drawn, all voiced by Scott, all drawn by Scott. There are 3 7-minute cartoons, Tycoon Tyke, Bright Lights, Big Steam, and Ape Trouble, all wonderfully voiced and drawn by Scott Dickers. Those who may have seen one of Scott's short films that you may have seen is one of my favorite YouTube clips, which we should throw a link to, called The Astounding World of the Future.
Yes.
Which is a fake newsreel of the year 2000, in which the year 2000 is depicted exactly as the year 2000 was. And so it's this incredibly depressing footage of this, of actually two Onion writers going through the drab motions of everyday life, like heating burritos and visiting grandma in a wonderful home where like this miserable old lady is lies dying.
So anyway,
what is making me happy is the work of Scott Diggers, who is not only a dear pal but a wonderfully, wonderfully talented person who is not necessarily, this particular project is not necessarily known to the world, and people should check out his cartoons. Go to dickers.com, D-I-K-K-E-R-S.
Anyway, so we are at the end of another episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour, and thanks to all of you guys for coming by.
Thank you.
Sure. Always a pleasure.
And you can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham, which Stephen likes to render as
Trey with an E, then Graham like the cracker.
You can follow Glenn at G-H Weldon, that's W-E-L-D-O-N. You can follow Mike at Mike Katziff.
Wait, who's Mike?
Mike is our estimable, awesome producer. And that's Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F, Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which we love.
Which we do
love. So
which you're listening to as I speak. So that brings us to the end of another Pop Culture Happy Hour, and we will see everybody next week.